Hello, welcome to the RTE Olympics podcast. Mikey Stafford here. I have been joined by Eric Donovan. It's almost midnight back in over in Paris now, Eric, and it was a mixed day in the Paris Nord Arena for the Irish, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, Mikey, it was a tough day, to be honest, but a glorious day as well for Kelly Harrington and for her family and friends and her all of her team and her club and everyone back in Portland Row and her wife Mandy. Like, I'm delighted for them. I really am. But yeah, the night, Jude Gallagher got the day off to start. And I have a very personal close link to Jude. We've been working together for a long time and I had real high hopes for him. I just wanted him to go out and prove himself, to really perform, give his best, and to just walk away from this Olympic Games with your head held high, knowing that you gave your best. And he did that. He did everything that he could have done on the day.
His opponent was exceptional. He was like a rubber ball with fists. He
Yeah,
was
he look.
remarkable.
He come up against just a very good opponent, but at the same time, I thought maybe the second round was Jude's, and it was 5-0 again. So look, what do I know about boxing? But
You know,
in
favorite
any,
Eric.
yeah, but look, I mean, I'm definitely not screaming robbery or anything like that. But
Yeah.
Jude ran him close. Jude ran him close, and on a different day, we wouldn't know. We could be looking at a different decision. But he can hold his head up high. He has proven himself. And he gave a good account of himself, and that's all he could do. He's only 22 years of age. He's had a serious couple of years, and now he just needs to enjoy himself with his family and friends and his girlfriend Jessica, and just enjoy the rest of the Olympics. And he can talk about his reset for the future when he gets back in a couple of weeks' time. But the night finished off on a real sour note, with Aoife O'Rourke losing, and I really backed Aoife to win a medal out here. Like most Irish people, I was so confident she was going to win a medal. She had beat Wasik many times, and I just thought she had her number. But before I go on into the fight to analyze it a bit more, I want to put my hands up and say that I actually missed the warning in the first round. So I had to ask my wife at who is at home to send me a video of the warning, because I said I did not see it. Wasn't very clear or apparent to me. And she sent me the video, and again, I could see it clearly in that. But again, it just shows you how quickly the ref did. He just did this. Normally, with a warning, they make it very clear and they'll point our finger to more than one judge. But he just put his hand up and just said box. And I wasn't. I just didn't get it. Went over my head, and I apologize for that. Maybe it's just a long day. It has been a long day, but
Oh,
look,
well, I
been
would
fun.
say, Eric, that there's people crying foul. There's references to Michael Conlon in Rio, and people are upset because he said Aoife was a definite medal hope, and she seems like a very likable boxer, and like people just love the way she fights. And people were very unhappy with how the Polish kind of fighter approached it. But you said it. The analysts on the TV said it as well, that the scoring of the judges is hard to fault it, but the referee was perhaps a little bit weak. Would you agree?
Yeah, and now looking back, retrospect is a great thing, but the referee did give a warning in round one, and what happens at times is the referees don't want to be responsible. And I think I said this to you in our previous podcast, Mikey. They don't want to be responsible for the outcome of a match in an Olympic game. So if they feel that one person is penalizing more than the other, then they will probably give a warning. And in the case of this fight, Wozniak got a warning. But after that, I thought she Wozniak clever, and credit to her, very clever in a way that she just pulled Aoife into a scrap, made it a terrible, messy affair, and just seemed to tore, affect her, get under her skin. And Aoife kind of played into that. She was trying to land the big shots, but she got a bit maybe too emotional in it all. What I mean by that is she lost her composure, and she got into a bit of a scrappy affair with her too. I still thought that her physicality and her strength would prevail, and she would eventually just shake off Wozniak, but Wozniak just kept making it messy. And I think maybe the referee felt that, okay, there's two people playing this game. So I'm not going to go in again with another. Look, I'm just trying to give an honest view. Maybe I'm not going to go in with another public warning because there's two of them kind of playing this game.
Is that boxing though? What Wojcik did, in your opinion, is it like you can say it's canny and it's clever and it's, you know, it won her the fight, but is it boxing? Because to me, it seemed like she was doing an excessive amount of holding and she was even throwing Aoife O'Rourke on a few occasions. It just seemed that she got under her skin all right, but was it legal what she did to get under her skin?
She just jumped on her from the start, you know, and she just tried to surprise her. And look, after the first round, I thought Aoife would just get into her flow and just really start landing at will and punching out, you know, and maybe win comfortably in the end. But Wojcik just kept being in her face, just kept being a nuisance. But she wasn't really trying to box properly. She was trying to be a spoiler and all that. So, look, I suppose the referee maybe bottled it. Maybe bottled it, you know? Because, like I said, they don't want to be, maybe just that fair, if they don't want to be responsible for the outcome, that they'd prefer the judges to deal with it. But when you're looking at the judging and the scoring of it, it was very, you know, 50-50, punches going in. You know, I couldn't really fault that. I suppose the only kind of saving grace that probably Aoife could have hoped for is if the referee went and gave another warning. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people probably wouldn't have complained about that. But I'm just trying to say that she done it in such a way that kind of dragged Aoife into the game too, into that kind of, you know, scrappy, messy, swinging, grappling. It was rough. It was really rough. It was a hard fight to watch. It was a hard fight to score, a hard fight kind of really to look at. And my heart goes out to Aoife. It really does, because this is all over so quick. Mm-hmm. I've been in fights like this before where you just feel like, oh, you're like, I heard Aoife's interview. She didn't disappoint. Like, look, I know she's going to be disappointed, but she didn't let anybody down, you know? I know the expectations she had on her shoulders. She's a winner. She's a 3-time European champion. She was coming out here and she wanted to win medals, and we all believed that she was going to win medals. But look, it's easy for all of us to say on the outside and say this is how it should have been done or that's how it should have been done. But she's a professional athlete. She knows herself that she didn't perform. Okay? That was, out of 10, that was like probably a 4. She didn't perform. She knows that. And Wojcik was responsible for making that happen as well. But as a 3-time European champion who has only been defeated once since the last Olympic Games, you have to be able to deal with this stuff.
Yeah.
You just have to be able to deal with it. This is, you know, elite level fighter, European champion, possible Olympic medalist. You have to be able to deal with the controversy. And I know that you need the judges and the referees and the responsible. You know you need them to do their job too. So it's just hard. Look, it's heartbreaking. You know what I mean? And I know that there's a lot of people who are really upset. And rightly so. Look, I was really hoping that Aoife was going to bring home a medal. I really was. We're all upset. Everybody's upset. I'm upset. I'm gutted for her. But nobody's more upset than her. Let me tell you that. Nobody's more upset than Aoife O'Rourke.
Yeah.
And all I will say is this. In the aftermath of it all, I have to, like, when things cool down, she'll regroup. She's a professional athlete. She's still well capable of going to another Olympic Games and winning a medal. So I don't doubt that for 1 second.
Absolutely. Well, look, if Wojcik showed us one way to win a boxing match, I think Kelly Harrington showed us the complete other end of the spectrum in her win over Angie Valdez of Colombia. It was imperious. To me, it just seemed like she just did what she wanted. And then in the third round, to me, it just looked like she kind of just wasn't showboating, but she seemed to be having fun in the third round and expressing herself a bit. And if you can do that when there's a bronze medal on the line, it speaks to a high level of confidence about your own abilities, I think.
It's incredible. It really is. And I said it on the comms that we are watching one of Ireland's greatest ever amateur fighters, you know, really. One of the world's best. What she does is just entertaining. It's skillful. It's a joy to watch. And we're going to now see a repeat of the Tokyo 2020 final in the Paris Olympic Games semi-final. Will it be repeat? Will it be revenge? We are in for some treat.
Yeah, that is the Brazilian. She won her fight convincingly as well, 5-0. So you've got two boxers coming in now who are obviously in good form. And that Saturday night, that's it's not in Roland Garros. It's going to be in the Paris Nord, but it's going to be a hell of a fight to look forward to. Briefly then, there, just tomorrow we have two boxers. It's amazing to think that poor Dana Morehouse still hasn't had a chance to fight, but she's in against a French opponent tomorrow, which, you know, hometown, make you know, you'd have your worries. And then Jack Marley is out in his own quarter final. Briefly, how do you think they should go?
Yeah, look, I hope Dana Morehouse can. She's a different fighter than when she lost to her opponent, her French opponent last year in the quarterfinal of the European Games in the Olympic qualifiers. She lost on a split decision, but she was coming back from an injury that time. She had a really bad injury with her foot. And now, over the last year, she's had a good lot of high-performance development, surrounded by professional coaches, support staff, and she's really learned so much. She's had high level training camps, high level sparring, and I think I was speaking to her the other day, she's very, very confident, and she did say it to me, I'm a different fighter than I was last year. So that's good. She has that quite confidence within her. Jack Marley is up against a very difficult opponent, but you know what, he has the ability, if he can put in a career best performance, to overturn Potaliev. Taliyev is a serious operator. Asian Games gold medalist, 25 years of age. And Asia is a very strong continent. Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, you just think of really strong, strong boxing nations.
All those are stands, they're all good.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I can't stand them. But no, like, look, it's but what I liked about Jack's performance the last time as well against his Polish opponent, even though he beat him before, he just came out with real gusto. And you can tell he's up for it. Like, he's going for it. And but Taliyev lost, or won in his preliminary round against, actually in his last 16 round against Cash Philly from Georgia. And the Georgian ran him so close. It was the closest of margins what Taliyev won in. So I hope that the team will be looking at the video analysis of that and just showing Jack what Taliyev doesn't like. He likes when you're standing off him and he picks you off. He loves it nice, easy, easy type of boxing where things are going the way he wants them to go. But if you jump on him, put pressure on him, let the shots go, high volume work, high volume punching, then he will not like it at all. So I expect
should put Wojcik in the ring with him.
Yeah, well, I expect that kind of performance from Jack, and I'd love to see him get over the line. So
that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, please God, now fingers crossed, because we need a rubber degree.
We need a little pick me up, yeah. Well, along with the boxing tomorrow, we've got Noel Hendrick in the canoe slalom semis. We're playing a hockey match against Argentina. Robert Dixon and Sean Waddilove could win a medal, very possibly, in sailing. Philip Doyle and Daryl Lynch are going in the final of their men's double sculls rowing as well. And the golf gets underway. And earlier today, I spoke to Gary Moran ahead of Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry's first rounds. Gary Moran has joined me to look ahead to the men's golf tournament, which starts tomorrow morning, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, or this morning, if you're listening on Thursday, at La Nationale. Gary, you were there today for the last day of practice. Paint a picture for us.
The picture, if anyone remembers the 2018 Ryder Cup, is of a slightly softer Golf Nacional. The rough is not quite so brutal. That was set up very particularly to suit the European team against the USA. It's still a very fair course. Tommy Fleetwood says it's one of the best and fairest courses they play. It does require a lot of accuracy. But from Fleetwood's point of view, and he's a fairly good thinker on the game, it's a course where the further you stray off the fairway, the worse the trouble is. And you might say, well, that's always the case, but sometimes there's very heavy thick rough, and if you go beyond the rough, the thickest of the rough, well, then maybe you get an easier lie. Sometimes that happens at an Open Championship, for example, where you might go over the really heavy stuff and end up in a good place. But it's fairly graduated and for quite a long distance, so it's very fair, does require straight hitting, and I think that good ball, good straight ball strikers. Scottie Scheffler, anybody, may well prosper.
Okay. Looking at a couple of previews this morning, Scheffler is mentioned as, I think he's the favourite, as he is the favourite for every golf tournament he enters at the moment, for good reason. He's winning a lot of them. Couple of things. One, his putter seemed to desert him a little bit at the Open. And secondly, he's been described as being hoofing around art galleries in Paris on a family holiday, which seems to be a theme. Shane Lowry went home to Ireland for the All-Ireland final. Rory McIlroy played St. Andrews. And the Open champions, Andrew Schauffele, went to Portugal on holiday. Golfers are allowed a break, but some people are asking, are they preparing for this the way they would, say, for one of the four majors, and whether you maybe should discount someone like Scheffler, who's maybe viewing this as almost a mid-season break before the FedEx Cup?
I think that's stretching it slightly. I mean, they've had a very fairly packed schedule, I would say, most of these top players. It's not like they're going to suddenly lose their game. Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa went down to Portugal. They played some golf, I think. Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy were also in Portugal. They didn't play golf because I think Rory's only played since the Open, that round in St. Andrews, plus practice yesterday and practice today here at Golf Nacional. They played the back nine today, Rory and Shane together. Scottie Scheffler, yes, he couldn't believe how little of the Louvre he managed to see in the several hours that he spent there with his wife and child.
It's a
as
big
well.
Place.
His very young baby. It's a big place. He couldn't get over the size of the paintings. But they're all gunning to win, of course. They're all competitive. They're not taking it, maybe you say, like a major. But I mean, some of them come in late for a major for one reason or another. They've set their schedules. They can't go at it all the time. They also got to stay fresh. And it's a decent field. I mean, you've got Scott. There's the big missing person is Bryson DeChambeau, and he's not high enough up in the world ranking. And that's largely, of course, because he plays in LIV, even though he's won a major this year. He's still not high enough in the ranking because America have four players in the top 16, which guarantees four American players get in. And there's Scottie Scheffler, and there's Xander Schauffele, and there's Colin Morikawa. And I can't immediately think of who the fourth American player is. Oh, yeah, I do. Wyndham Clark. So they have a strong hand, and there's a strong field. Yeah, you're right to say that largely for some of them, they've taken a bit of a mid-season break. They're going to be going back soon to play several FedEx Cup events. And you just can't do it all the time. And a break might be good for them.
Yeah. So how do you rate the Irish chances then, Gary? Obviously, Shane Lowry showed a lot of good form at the Open, admittedly playing on the kind of golf courses which people say suit him best, but that's not to say he can't win around a Parkland course where straight hitting is preferred. And Rory McIlroy, who, speaking to our colleague Darren Farrell yesterday, you know, he'd love an Olympic medal because it might stop people annoying him about majors for 5 minutes, but I don't think even Rory McIlroy puts it up there in the same level as a fifth major. But this is a golf course he knows well and has played well on in the past, so would you rate Ireland as medal contenders?
Well, yeah, Ireland are the two Irish individuals, both have possibilities of medals for sure. Lowry hasn't played here, bar the Ryder Cup, for quite a while, but in 2010 he was fourth in the French Open, 2016 he was third. Back in his debut season, he missed the cut in the French Open, that was 2008. And Shane Lowry wasn't on the Ryder Cup team and doesn't have in his French, which I'm not sure how many French Opens he's played. He's never had a really high finish in it. But yeah, in a field of 60 and the level that they're playing at, they have chances. But I always think that almost without exception, trying to actually pick your winner of a golf tournament, unlike, say, a tennis tournament, is just a mad notion, because so many of them can win. It's really hard to pick the winner. But I do agree that Scottie Scheffler does merit being the favourite. All the wins he's had this year. He's the world number one. He is confident, I think, that he's going to do well. He's talked a good game. So that it's hard to pick anyone ahead of him. But at the same time, he's less than 50-50 to win it. For sure, Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry have chances of winning a medal.
Yeah. And just to clarify for people, because a lot of people listen to this podcast are general sports fans, golf mightn't be their thing. This is not a team event. They're not playing together. They're playing as individuals. And it is played in stroke play, which for people is you play four rounds of 18 holes. whoever has the lowest score at the end wins. And if there's a tie, you have a tie break, which is called a playoff, where you play and you keep playing holes until somebody has a better score than the other. It's the same as the golf we see every week on the PGA Tour, basically, Gary, isn't it?
It's the same as the golf that we see in all the majors on the PGA Tour in the vast majority of your, well, almost every DP World Tour event. It's a pity in one way, because Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy had a fabulous win in a team event called the Zurich Classic about 2 months ago, maybe nearly 3 months ago at this stage. And so there was a team element in that, although they're still golfing. Well, depends on the different days. They have a slightly different format. And I spoke actually to Doug Ferguson of Associated Press, who'd be a frequent contributor on radio, RTE Radio Sport, today. And he was saying, absolutely is the right thing to do is to play it in the regular format. Yes, if you want to introduce a team element as well, okay, that's a consideration. But he says, all this kind of nonsense about looking for something exciting. Golf is a 72-hole event in most cases, certainly most tournaments at the highest level. Obviously, live tournaments are 54 holes, and he thinks it should be that way. He does say that plans are quite advanced for LA to have the men's tournament followed by a weekend of a team event, men and women, and then the women's tournament in the second week of LA. So that's yet to be confirmed by the IOC. So you could bring in a team element there, and that would be interesting and a little bit different to make it stand out as well. But yes, it is the regular type of golf tournament that's going to decide the gold, silver and bronze here in Paris.
Okay, the fact that there's conversations about it, Gary, and like sports come in and out of the Olympics, you know, regularly, you know, there's a lot of people who are watching the breaking, I don't think it started yet, at least I haven't seen any of it. You know, you've got BMX riding, you've got skateboarding. These are sports that are fairly new to the Olympics. And most people, maybe some people roll their eyes, maybe some people say, that's great, they're sports that kids are interested in. When golf came back in for Rio, there was a pretty, you know, in some quarters, violent reaction to it. I think people kind of saying golf doesn't belong in the Olympics. And to a point, I could agree. I could see the argument, because I think there is some merit in the argument that if a gold medal in a sport isn't the absolute pinnacle of achievement in that sport, maybe it shouldn't be an Olympic sport. And there's no question that golf, a gold medal is the pinnacle. Like, there's no way that Justin Rose's gold medal in the Olympics means more to him than his major title. There's no way it does. No one can tell me it does. Do you prescribe to that logic? Because as well as being a golf journalist with RTE, you are also an Olympics veteran and a fountain knowledge on athletics and various Olympic sports. So you could be said to have a foot in both camps here, Gary.
Yeah, well, you're 100% right in what you say. I was at Tommy Fleetwood's press conference today. We read the comments of Rory McIlroy. I wasn't at his press conference yesterday, but widespread, yes, the majors, the four golf majors, are certainly a more desired victory for all of these players than the Olympic medal. Perhaps the French guys who are here might say, oh, it'll be just as good as winning a major, but that is the exception. And there's no argument about that, and they all have mixed feelings. In fact, what Rory said was, you know, if we got to the stage where it wasn't being asked, then we'd really know that golf was properly settled into the Olympics. And there is the question, yes, if it's not the biggest thing, then why should golf be in the Olympics? And maybe golf was brought into the Olympics. The conversation started around 2007, 2008, before it was in 2016, because at the time, Tiger Woods was the biggest sports star in the world, quite possibly across all sports. And, the Olympics might have wanted Tiger Woods. Maybe that was part of the reason. So maybe if golf stays in the Olympics for several more cycles, then it'll become a bigger deal. But yeah, that's what you've said is really correct. It's something that the players here certainly want, but it's not going to be, none of them are really going to, except maybe the French, are going to rank it as big as a major.
Okay, well, that kind of, it kind of chimes a little bit, I think, with, because golf did used to be, you know, more than a century ago, it was one of the original or earliest sports in the Olympics. And in Paris in 1900, as my Olympic fact for today, it was won by an American called Charles Sands. That was the first ever gold medal in men's golf. He won by one stroke from Britain's Walter Rutherford. The interesting about Sands was he also competed in tennis at the Paris Games, but he went out in the first round there, but a multi-sportsman. But perhaps not helping golf's reputation at the time, or maybe now with people looking back, the man who came eighth in the Olympic golf tournament in 1900 was a man called Albert Lambert. And he was so wealthy, he was the primary financial supporter of Charles Lindbergh's 1927 transatlantic flight. So, you know, golf's come a long way. It is now a very, you know, it's a very egalitarian sport. You know, it's played all over the world by people of, from every socioeconomic background. But it wasn't always the case, Gary. It did have a bit of a rep back in 1900, I'd say.
Yeah. I'd say so, yeah. Back in the days of the wealthy amateur players who possibly, well, they wouldn't have dominated, I don't think. But yeah, there were certainly a wealthy amateur set who were competitive at world level, if there was such a thing as a worldwide golf game. That's it. There wasn't really. I mean, I can remember going back 1970s, 1980s, when the England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, those teams would do really, really well at, say, European amateur championship level. And the notion that a Norway or a Sweden or a Germany or an Italy, like if you were drawn against one of those in the European match play, it was like, great stuff. We'd be through to the quarters tomorrow. But it's not like that anymore. Like, it's become a way more worldwide sport. And you just need to look at the various tours as to how many countries it's played in now. So it's certainly very, very different from over a century ago in terms of global appeal, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, look, that's over the next 4 days. Now you can keep track of Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy and how they go at Le Golf National. That's RTE2 television, RTE Radio 1. You'll hear Gary's dulcet tones, and the RTE website, where we'll be keeping you abreast of that with our live blogs, digital highlights, reports, and everything else. So thanks for tuning in tonight, everybody, or this morning. And I'll be back tomorrow, and hopefully we might be chatting to Gary later on in the week about the golf. Thanks very much, Gary. See you all again soon.